Folks, we're going to get started here. I apologize for getting started here a few minutes late. We have a couple of issues we need to resolve here this morning. Number one, I appreciate everybody's willingness and wanting to participate in the process, but as you can see, we have a small room with a large number of people, and I've been notified that we have to ask some people to step out for fire code and safety reasons. So if you do not have a seat right now at this time, I'm going to have to ask you to clear the doorway and to keep that pathway open so that in case we do have to, for whatever reason, evacuate this room for fire or other safety, that we do that. If you have other friends who are in here and you want to tag team and people coming in and hearing part of the testimony, I suspect most of you are here for House File 1358. That will be our second bill. Representative Holberg has a bill that we'll be taking immediately at the start of the session today. So, again, we need you to voluntarily go, or otherwise we'll have to ask the pages to tap people on the shoulders to vacate the room. We have a capacity issue here today. Anyone here for 1523 that would want to testify on that? So if you're here for 1523, we need you folks to stay in the room here with us today. Because yeah, we will notify you when we'll start 1358, because the first bill people will move out, and then we'll be able to bring additional people into the conference room here this morning. So with that,
we've been this crowded before.
A quorum is present, and so what we will do is we will proceed to adopting the minutes from the past few meetings that we've had of the Government Operations Committee, which would be the 32nd and 33rd meeting. Representative Quam, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam moves approval of the meeting minutes from the 32nd and 33rd meeting of the House Government Operations and Elections Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. Our first bill on the agenda today is House File 1523. And Representative Holberg is here. I will ask Representative Holberg what her intentions for this bill are before I move it to and bring it before the committee. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill before you today is tries to address an issue that in particular is a concern in our some of our vacation areas of the state, in that people own properties, they may not be using them all summer, and they may choose to rent out these properties, and so we're trying to get at that type of use, but there's a whole range of ideas as to how to solve this problem. We've come to the conclusion that a one-page bill isn't going to address the wide range of concerns around this issue. Everybody agrees that we don't want to stop this type of use, as it's very important to the economy in these areas of the state where tourism is so important. But we also don't want them to become nuisance properties and affect the livability or enjoyability of other people's properties as a result. There's a handful of people who would just like to testify today. I have had discussions with everybody, and I think what we'd like to do is just briefly get the major concerns around this issue on the record, commitment to work on this issue over the interim, and then lay the bill on the table.
Very good. So Representative Holberg would like to have an informational meeting on this, provide the committee with some background, and asks that it be laid over.
And briefly, given your room, the number of people, and the scope of your agenda today.
And we do have a rather long agenda, so for all testifiers on any of the bills that are before us today, brevity is going to be next to godliness today, so that we can get through all of the bills that we have. So I will move House File 1523 to come before the committee this morning and to be laid over at the committee. Representative Holberg, please begin with your witnesses and your testimony.
I would just turn that time over.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bill Griffith. I represent the Minnesota Vacation Rental Association, and our members are owners of vacation rental properties, primarily single-family homes and cabins, but also some multifamily units and condominiums. We were created as an association in response to two things. First of all, the growing interest in this use. It provides a wonderful opportunity for families to come to tourism areas and urban centers like Minneapolis and St. Paul, and other urban centers in the state. on a different basis than public lodging, and that's really the reason for the distinction. This is a private rental agreement between an owner and a renter, and so it is different than public lodging. And for the last couple of years, the Minnesota Department of Health has attempted to regulate and license vacation rental in the same manner as it does public lodging, and that really is where the conflict arises, because these vacation rentals that can be in small cabins, single-family homes, lake homes, and they don't operate like public lodging. They don't have the same facilities. They're not open to the public. They're by private contract. They don't have swimming pools, restaurants, golf courses, and all the amenities that we associate with public lodging. And so it's created a very difficult arrangement, and many local governments don't really exactly know what to do with this use. And so what we offered, and certainly agree with the author of our bill that it needs some more work, what we offered was a clarification that this use is allowed under zoning. And so it's a use that's allowed in single-family districts, because that's primarily where they reside. They are homes and cabins, and also in multifamily districts where there are condos and rental units that are available for this purpose. And in working with the various groups, we looked at a number of other issues. Licensing, we're certainly open to reasonable licensing regulation, which would give local government the ability to protect the public health, safety, and welfare through egress and safety issues. And so we're certainly open to that, and we've always said that wherever we've testified on these measures. But we do understand that the local units want to understand this use better and understand what a reasonable licensing program might look like. We are very clear about one thing. We are not public lodging under the state's definition. We do not believe that the Department of Health should be in the business of regulating these local land uses, and that certainly the local units of government have plenty of tools to address any nuisance concerns, issues regarding public safety and public welfare. So thank you for your time, and I hope that was next to godliness.
Thank you, Mr. Griffith. It is appreciated. Members, questions for Mr. Griffith? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Griffith, as you look at this over the summer, I think there's a line at some point here between somebody who does this occasionally and rents it out for a week or 3 weeks a year, and somebody and potentially a neighborhood where there are a lot of these homes and they do it half the year. Or if you go to a website, there are a lot of places especially the coastal beach type areas where there will be a whole kind of gated community where all the homes almost are up for rental part of the year. And you go to the website and you can check on availability and so on, and that starts to look more like a resort, more like a hotel kind of thing. And on the other hand, you have people who are clearly just kind of doing it a little bit. And it seems to me that as we look at this issue, at some point, members of the public, consumers, begin to have the expectation that there is some amount of governmental regulation to make sure that their health and safety are protected. At some point, you get far enough down the path where these vacation home rentals start to look like a resort. And sometimes you get, too far to the other side. So I don't know how to figure that out and decide what is on one side and what is on another, but I think it's a legitimate issue to be raised. And if you have a home in a neighborhood and it's by a nice lake and with a golf course nearby, and half or three quarters of the people in the neighborhood are renting out their homes for 10, 15 weeks a year or something like that, that starts to look different than a single family residential neighborhood, and the situation is different. So I guess my only point is, as you look at this over the interim, to understand that I think there is a legitimate place for public regulation at some point in the vacation home rental market, and from the state, local units of government, I'm not sure, but it starts to look like a resort.
Thank you. Thanks for your comment.
Other questions for the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Griffith.
Thank you.
Representative Holberg, before we get any further, I know that there were some amendments that were being proposed. Did you want to take those at this time? We'll get the bill in the form that you want them, and then we'll proceed with the rest of the testimony.
Mr. Chair, if you look at them, you can see they kind of come from one end of the spectrum and the other. It's not my intent to move any amendments today, but rather to get the interested parties on the record as to their top one or two concerns and then their commitment to work on this issue in the interim.
All right, thank you. And with that, then, I did start taking testimony before the committee actually officially did take the bill for consideration today. So I will ask if there is any question. If not, We'll move the bill for consideration before the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? All right. Continue with the next testifier, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I represent the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, which is an association of family-owned Minnesota businesses here in Minnesota that provide recreational opportunities and access to our great natural resources for many of your constituents. We do have concerns about vacation rental homes. In fact, what we how we tried to address this was through legislation that Larry Howes carried in, I believe, 2008, that established a vacation rental home task force convened by the Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. And what our charge was is, what can we do to define and make sure that this is an appropriate use, but also what can we do to encourage the use? No one here is opposed to appropriate vacation rental home use, and that was the charge to that commission, and I was a member of that group. I think that as a result of the report that was put together through local units of government and resort owners and others, that gave birth to Mr. Griffin's group. And what it sounds like we're at now is, now we need to go back to the drawing board with that group, now that there is an organized vacation rental home organization, and get their more detailed input into how this operation or businesses should best be controlled. You need to know that the Department of Health has regulated vacation rentals for over two decades. And we, on the Bright Line issue, Representative Winkler, of whether or not this is public lodging, that is just a bright line for us, and we believe they're held out to the public. They are rented as public accommodations. They are subject to some level of regulation right now. And so for us to suggest that this is a private rental and doesn't impact any public accommodation is one of the key points that we'll need to arm wrestle over, because we just absolutely think that that bright line is that they are held out to the public. You can find them on the website. They're advertised in the newspapers. And to say that they're not public, they have pools, they have hot tubs, they have all kinds of amenities that my organization is absolutely regulated for. Room size, pool, lakeshore, minnows. I mean, we have all kinds of regulations that we work through the Department of Health with, many of which apply to these public accommodations. So we're absolutely committed to Representative Holberg and to others to try and work through this issue again and come back with a reasonable set of reforms that help get our arms around this. You need to know that many local units of government are doing this absent legislative activity. Stearns County, the northern counties are moving forward with their own ordinances, because you do absolutely have a conflict between private residential housing, whether it's in town or on Lakeshore, and people that are renting their home in a residential area on a daily, nightly, or weekly basis. And so we do have conflict that needs to be resolved, and we're happy to work on it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you.
And I appreciate Representative Kahn bringing all these people to hear on this
important issue.
It's an important issue.
That's a different arm wrestling match.
All right, the next witness, please. You'll identify yourself for the record, please.
My name's Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Lodging Association, representing 500 hotels and motels in Minnesota, and I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association. Our members have many of the same concerns that Joel Carlson explained. We also understand that our many neighbors and both lakes and urban neighborhoods have an interest in, on occasion, renting their homes. And we're committed to working with Representative Holberg and with other parties of interest to try to resolve, to find reasonable accommodation. We look at these as home occupations, not unlike other kinds of home occupations that have been regulated by cities, counties, and townships for a long time. But there are complexities having to do with health, fire, septic, other issues, and with some tax issues. So we'll look forward to working with Mr. Griffin, with other interested parties, and with Representative Holberg League of Cities, I know, are involved, and other governmental units in finding a solution that balances the rights of property owners, the rights of the public, and a reasonable public competition, commercial competition.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy, for your testimony. Any questions of Mr. McElroy while he's here? All right, the witness is you're dismissed, sir. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Identify yourself if you would for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Tom Grundorfer, General Counsel with the League of Minnesota Cities. Also, in the interest of brevity, we're consolidating the testimony or comments of local government groups, so I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Township Association and the Minnesota Association of Counties as well. And there are representatives here if questions should come up. I appreciate the efforts of Representative Holberg. I appreciate her effort to lay this over so we can work on the issues. Two comments from a local government perspective why we have concerns with this bill. First of all, we're a little bit concerned about the issue of having the legislature really define what is now an acceptable sort of set of uses in residential areas. It really, in my mind, and I think local government's minds, puts the legislature in a sort of super zoning board kind of capacity. And basically, I think you're going to see a lot of groups coming forward asking for authority to put particular uses in residential uses if we kind of go forward with this as it is written. Our second concern is, and it's been brought up, that the definition of a vacation rental is fairly undefined and very, very broad as it's currently written in the legislation. As a consequence, it has the potential of bringing a whole variety of what I think would be considered in most cities commercial uses into residential zones. And as a result of the way it's written and the broad way it's written, we have to express concerns. And we, too, commit to work with Representative Holberg on trying to make this a more workable piece of legislation. So I'd be available for any questions.
Mr. Grundhofer, thank you for your testimony. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Grundhofer this morning? Thank you, sir. Anyone else wishing to testify? Sir, come to the table. We'll go with you, and then you're on deck. Sir, please identify yourself for the record, if you would.
I will. Mark Lauterbaugh. I'm here representing myself. Although there are a number of people that have a situation that I do, I live next to one of these vacation home rental properties. So I'm very aware of what goes on. It is a business. It truly is. The place next to me generates $20,000, $25,000 a year over 5 to 6 months. 250 people go by me in the summertime into that place. It's on a substandard lot, it's a 46-foot lot. This needs some regulation, as we have talked about. We did it in the Minnesota Task Force. So I just wanted to be here to say I'm the other side all by myself to show you that somebody is affected by this, okay? I have a right to a quiet environment on my property. I do feel people have a right to rent their property out. I think it's wrong to, in a residential zone, to say that a business can be classified as a single-family dwelling or a multifamily. The way I read the amendment, wherever you live, say you lived in Edina, the guy next to you can say, I'm a vacation home rental. Doesn't have to be on a lake. Now you have all these people going by you. You would be here just like I am testifying against this. I didn't mean to pick you out, the chairman. Those are kind of my concerns. The environmental, the place next to me rents, it's got a two-bedroom septic permit. 12 to 16 people are in there all the time. It definitely overloads that system. I've talked to Wright County. That's where my place is. They're looking for some direction from the state. There's no doubt about that. Okay. I don't think that taking over their ability in a residentially zoned area that they established and saying that you can put a business there and you can never get it out of there. You could never get a vacation home rental out of there because you've called it a single family dwelling. You can regulate, the H out of it. It still doesn't matter. If everybody in the neighborhood, you only have one like we do, you can't get rid of that operation. I'm done.
Mr. Lauterbach, thank you for your testimony today. Yeah. I did see Representative Holberg jotting some notes down of your concerns, and I know that she will take those into consideration as they continue to move forward with this. Members, questions for Mr. Lauterbach? Sir, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Good morning, and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Forster, and I am the executive director of the Minnesota Seasonal Recreational Property Owners, so cabin owners. And we served on the original Explore Minnesota Task Force 4 years ago. I think it was 4 years ago now that began investigating this issue, and we wrote sort of a dissenting view of the outcome of that, the study of that report. And so the problems that are being raised here in this committee, by every single one of the testimonies, testifiers, are problems that we recognized kind of right out of the gate. I'm glad to hear that the bill will be laid over, and the discussions will be ongoing over the summer. We did a survey last year of about 3,000 cabin owners in the state. We found that less than 7% have ever rented their cabin out, their seasonal property. Of that 7%, 75% of them rented it to family and friends. So that's sort of the carve-out that I think Representative Winkler was looking at, and that's really, you know, how do I identify those people that are renting to family and friends as a, you know, and frankly, a lot of times people are renting them to cover the property taxes, so they rent them for a week or two, and that's, you know, how they can afford to keep the place. But we are anxious to work on this over the interim, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Forsterman, for your testimony today. Members of the committee, questions for Mr. Forsterman? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Well, certainly the testimony has been brief. You could probably quite quickly recognize some of the challenges here around this issue. I would certainly look forward to any of your input or involvement as we try and work on this in the interim, and hopefully we're able to come back next year and at least address some of the issues that seem to be pervasive and haven't been addressed.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. Before we lay this over, I will ask if there's anyone from the general public who is here today who would like to testify on the matter for the committee on House File 1523. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holberg, are one of the options you're looking at residency time, so that if a person is resident in that home for, say, 9 months, 10 months, 11 months of the year, and as was alluded to in the testimony, only rents it out for a very short period of time and to offset the property taxes, is that one of the exemptions that you're looking at, or what type of exemptions or modifications are you looking at?
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, it's probably too early even to characterize that. I'm not sure that the issue would be related to whether or not it was a residency. I think many of these properties are vacation or cabin type of uses, seasonal uses. So it may be a factor, but I think it has more to do with the frequency and type of use of the property, whether the property can support the use. We heard the testimony of the gentleman talking about a 46-foot lot with a two-bedroom facility on a septic tank with 12, 16 people using it over and over and over again through the course of the summer. I mean, I think on a number of levels that's problematic, both for the health reasons with the septic system, let alone the neighborhood and what they put up with around that kind of use.
Representative Holberg, thank you. If there are no other questions, we will move to lay this bill over.
Thank you. You've been very generous with your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. The next item that we are going to be taking up is House File 1358. Representative Kahn, if you would proceed to the testifying table, and welcome to the committee. And we have House File 1358. Representative Hancock, would you move the bill before the committee, please?
Where am I moving it to, Mr. Chair?
The floor.
General Register?
We'll be moving to the General Register after
okay.
today.
Thank you. I would like to move this bill to pass and to move to the General Register.
Representative Kahn, there are a couple of amendments that are here today.
Yes, I have two amendments of mine. The DE1 amendment, and so I'd certainly like that adjusted. And this puts the bill in the same form as it was when it left the Senate committee.
Okay.
And it's also, I think, a more understandable form. And then I have the next amendment, too.
All right. Members, in your packet of information today, we have a DE1 amendment. And we also have an A2 amendment. So let's take the DE1 amendment first. And then we'll deal with the A2 amendment in just a few moments. Representative
yep.
Hancock, would you go ahead and move the DE1 amendment for us today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the DE1 amendment.
Thank you. And Representative Kahn, I know that you have a witness who has a tight time schedule, so if you wanted to get started and then have that witness come forward.
If we just put the bill in the form, I think it makes more sense.
Okay.
And then if we add the A2 amendment too, which is a termination date, which should be...
At this time, you'd like the A2 amendment as well?
Yeah. Well, why don't I incorporate the A2 into the... Let's do the DE1.
Let's go ahead
that
and adopt the DE1 amendment
in shape
we'll
so that
the A2. Yes, so the senator can testify.
Yes.
All right. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? To your bill, Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, I'd now like to put the A2 amendment on also, which is, because again, it deals with, I've listened to people about what the complaints
Certainly.
Are, and this deals with one of the complaints.
Certainly.
From
there. I will move the A2 amendment.
Maybe we can cut the testimony down later.
Okay, thank
what
you.
This does is put a distinct termination date on.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The bill is now in the form that the author wants. Please
thank
proceed, Representative Kahn.
Instead of making a... I know you're very tight for time, so instead of making a big speech about how wonderful this bill is, I'll turn to my chief first witness, who was, even though he has the disadvantage of being a senator, he is also head of the NRP policy board, and he knows a lot more about it than I do. So.
Senator Keel. See, I was going to give
yes,
you a promotion
you,
and
yes.
move you over to the House, Senator. My apologies. My apologies. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I'm Senator Ken Keel-Ash. I appreciate you accommodating my time schedule with the Senate. I've also been approximately 12 year member of the NRP Policy Board, and then for the last year and a half, I've been the chair of that board. A couple of things that we need to talk about the program. First of all, it was started in 1990 and 91. There was a joint powers agreement between Hennepin County, the Minneapolis Park Board, the Minneapolis Library Board, the City of Minneapolis, and which one am I missing? Hennepin County. In that time, they planned on 20-year because the money was going to run out in 2009, and they planned on a 20-year time frame. Well, one of the things they couldn't foresee is all the problems that it takes. This is a small-D democracy, so all of these neighborhood associations establish their neighborhoods. They're all 501c3s. They all operate under strict guidelines, and they have limits as to what they can spend the money on based on the Joint Powers Agreement setting up the NRP Policy Board, which is the current governing board of that. This bill is an extension of the current management system of the NRP. It is the idea being that the money was collected in 2009. There are no taxes in this bill at all. We're not trying to take anything from the city. This money was never in the city's budget. So I wanted to make that very clear because there's some talk about this bill raises taxes. It does not. The other thing is that there's been a lot of discussion about why is this coming before the legislature, and why can't the neighborhoods work it out with the city. And I will tell you this, that over 2 years ago, the City of Minneapolis started their new what's called the NCR program. They hired a director, and in that 2-year time frame, There was numerous meetings between the two directors to try to transition this this program into the city's program. How it was going to be, what the changes that the city wanted that would still comply with state statutes and the NRP requirements that are in state statutes. And what happened is that through a series of meetings and goals set by that group and trying to work this out, the city missed every single deadline that they had for getting paperwork done, getting job descriptions done, and we were negotiating in good faith. In fact, in September of last year, the policy board approved this transition policy. The city of Minneapolis never agreed to the transition, and in December they cut funding for the whole program. These neighborhoods are operated by volunteers, and one of the things that is very difficult, you'll hear a lot of testimony about the amazing things they've done. They've leveraged over $1 billion in private funding to make City of Minneapolis a better place to live, work, and play. A lot of in 2000, the team report stated categorically that because of the way the neighborhoods spent this money and the way they've invested, it's really not a spending, it's more of an investment in their neighborhoods. The property values in Minneapolis in both commercial quarters and in residential property values went up, statistically directly related to the NRP. So neighborhoods have done a great job investing in that. One of the things that has been difficult, they have been working on leveraging, and what the neighborhoods need to know is that if you're negotiating a contract with a developer to put in some housing or a new business or a storefront in your neighborhood, you need to know that the money is going to be there, that you're negotiating in good faith. When the city took the money away or tried to take the money away, they created all this uncertainty. So now we have several neighborhoods that have completed most of their funding, other neighborhoods that are still in the process of doing their Phase 2 action plan. I believe there's an action plan in your packets to show you what kind of work it takes to put these together. They're very thorough. The neighborhoods do outreach to neighbors. They ask, have several meetings to say what is it that our neighborhood wants to do with the park or with this development. How should we spend dollars on housing? And they have done an extraordinary job of leveraging it. In fact, I think we have a number of $1 billion, but that doesn't include folks that, because the NRP invested in housing in their neighborhood, they invested on their own because suddenly they realized that the neighborhoods are no longer deteriorating, and painting and fixing up their houses became much more valuable in the process. So it's done what's intended to do as far as slowing down the deterioration of neighborhoods in Minneapolis. And in fact, Minneapolis in the last census has gained 12 people, and some of that has to do with the fact that they are no longer leaving the city. I think the points I think I want to make is that the reason this bill came up is, number one, negotiations didn't work. Number two, neighborhoods need, and volunteers in the neighborhoods need, certainty of the funding source so they can do their negotiations, do their leveraging. We're not asking for anything in the future from the city. This takes and completes the program. When the program was established, nobody realized how much work it would take, and there's been fits and starts with funding as far as certainty about how much funding. We started off in 2009. I think Director Bob Miller is going to be better at that than I am, but we started with 50%, then 70%. Last June, the City Council approved 100% funding for the neighborhoods. We sent out all of the funding for the neighborhoods is based on formula relating to free and reduced lunch, rental property, home ownership, etc. And that formula said that these neighborhoods need to do it. There's about 17 neighborhoods that are still in the process of putting their Phase 2 planning together. They don't know for certain that they can do that at this point in time. They don't know if they can leverage their dollars in a certain way. So that the goal here was to try to at least let this program run its course as originally intended by the state legislature. And there's a reason why the state legislature insisted that this money be spent through the neighborhoods, and that's because the city reneged on a past TIF district, and they said this TIF money was going to go for the neighborhoods, and so the legislature insisted that all the money has to be spent through neighborhood action plans. The small D democracy, they take longer to do, and they've done a phenomenal job. And there's, you know, the neighborhoods are passionate about this because this program has taken a big city and cut it into small neighborhoods where people finally know where they're from. There was hardly any neighborhoods in the past, and they've been volunteering their time and their efforts, and they've really improved the quality of life in the city of Minneapolis. So I'd be glad to take any questions.
Senator, your final comments seem to be rather angelic.
Mr. Chair, there are communities all over the country and the world that have checked in with NRP to see how it's been done. It has been written up in several books out of Harvard for one of the community advocates and researchers on this. It is one of these rare happy accidents that the legislature, when they said the money has to go through the neighborhoods, they empowered those neighborhoods to actually accomplish what they set out to do. Instead of saying we have to compete with the city, or here's your money, you have guidelines for what you can do with it, and those guidelines include investing 52.5% in housing, and there's a whole series of things that we do. They have to go through checks and balances. The neighborhoods have been amazingly productive. They've done, with very few exceptions, done a great job in managing the money, and it's been a great program. So,
Senator, thank you for your testimony. I do know that we have one.
Is there any questions?
One person that has a question. Representative Winkler, then Representative Nelson, you'll be next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kulesh, I'm still not sure how I feel about this bill or this issue. It's complicated, and there are strong feelings and strong arguments on both sides. So I'm going to ask some questions that I hope you don't assume that it means I'm opposed to your bill or Representative Kahn's bill, which I would never do with any kind of lack of careful forethought. But the question is, did the city ever have an obligation to create this NRP program? Did the state require them to do it, or was this an option? The follow-up is, and if so, why would the legislature not leave it up to the city to make the decision?
Both cases, the city wanted to get their TIF district extended, as my understanding from 20 years ago, and they wanted to take advantage of, they had high interest rates, they wanted to take advantage of the difference in that, and they did, and this is, and so when they came to the state legislature for approval of this, they had already had a bad faith with the legislature at that time about how they spent a previous TIF funding, and there's probably folks that can do better clarify that, like the director Miller. But so the legislature wasn't going to get fooled again, and they said, if you're going to spend this on neighborhoods, we're going to let the neighborhoods decide where the money's going to go. So the city of the first class was the one that could do it. They set it up. There was issues with the tax increment district being also funding schools and the other Hennepin County, the park board, and the library board. And so they had a joint powers agreement. Everybody on that joint powers agreement assumed that we'd be able to get this spending done in the 20-year time frame. One of the big reasons why I'm asking for this is that because of the capacity of the city and the NRP to be able to gear up for 81 neighborhoods, they had to have staggered starts. So some neighborhoods had 20 years currently to do their work, and most of those have done a great job. But others didn't start in their NRP until 5 years later. So this is stretching out the timeline, allowing these neighborhoods to continue and complete their work like all the other neighborhoods that have done in the last few years is just a matter of fairness, and I think. And the money is allocated based on a formula so that neighborhoods that are in good shape don't get as much as neighborhoods that are in desperate need. And one of the things that the last few neighborhoods here are some of those neighborhoods that are in the most need. So,
well,
Representative Winkler, Mr. Chair, Senator Kulesh, really try. I mean, I. Okay. There's a separate set of questions about the wisdom of terminating this and what it means and so forth. But just from a strictly in the governance issue, did the state require them to create an NRP program to get the TIF, or did they enable them and the city chose
they
to do it?
They enabled them.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, then the follow-up question, but the statute, the enabling statute, did not include a termination provision.
That's right, the Joint Powers Agreement had a termination, but that was just for the funding, primarily. The funding is, and we haven't collected any money on this since 2009, so...
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, Kielash. So the enabling legislation, I assume, I mean, as I read it, they left some discretion to the city about how to create, run, enact, and fund the NRP program.
Sounds like Representative Kahn has an answer to your question.
I have a copy of the statute.
Why?
So maybe
I'm looking
at it. I know,
but
you're the only one. So maybe it's helpful to pass
if,
it out.
If one of the pages could take those from Representative Kahn and distribute them to the members of the committee.
Mr. Chair, also Kielash and Senator Representative Kahn, I'm just trying to get a kind of a feel for how much discretion the legislature gave the city in the first place to create, fund, and run the program, and how that discretion, and whether the action by the city to, which well, I'll just say the action by the city, runs afoul of the discretion that the legislature gave them in some way.
Well, let me try that. Now that everyone has a copy of the statute in front of them, I think what Representative Winkler is focusing on is in Subdivision 2, the establishment, which certainly says it may establish. But when you read the rest of the statute, it's awfully specific about what happens after that's established. And as we said, there's nothing about the termination of it. And what this bill is trying to do is trying to do an orderly transition to the termination. And yes, it is true that when this was passed, the city did not they could have gone to that May and say we're not going to establish it. But once they did establish it, there's awful lot of specifics about what they need to be done, all of which has been followed by NRP. So I think, you know, it is true. And if the city wanted to stop this, the place to come was to the legislature to change the law, not to just blindside it and rip off the funding by themselves.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, Senator Kielash, but isn't, I mean, the program doesn't have sort of an orderly termination provision in it now, as I understand it. And I guess the question is, you know, if the city had the discretion to create it in the first place, why would they not have the however, if they do it, it's highly prescribed. And so now we're in a position where the city has opted to terminate it and or taken some action at the end of the life to some degree of the program. And we haven't given, we're someplace between the discretion to create it in the first place and the very specific ways in which it has to be implemented if you do it. And now we're at the end, and there is, you know, the language in the statute doesn't say exactly what has to be done. And the city must have some discretion to take some action at the end of the program since we didn't tell them exactly what to do. So if this is where it seems like we're in kind of a gray area on the question of whether the city, you know, is following the intended purpose of the statute or not in
well,
this.
Representative Kahn.
I think it would be good at this point to call Mr. Miller up, who is the staff person for the NRP and who is much more cognizant of the history and the negotiations than any of us are. So I'd like to call Mr. Miller up to testify.
One moment. We do have a number of questions for Senator, and I know Senator's on a very tight timeline here, so I want to be able to manage that as well. Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, one of the things that the money that is currently here is still under the requirement to be spent out the way the state legislature said it was going to do in the statute. So what we're doing is that the city of Minneapolis is trying to create a new program that's a neighborhood outreach program that has, for the most part, not lived up to the billing that they've done. They've not met criteria. And so what this does is it just continues the funding the way the state statute says, the way the program has been run in the last 20 years, and allows those neighborhoods that still have some time, because they didn't start at the same time, to complete their phase two planning and implementation of that. So that's the goal of this, to try to make it sure that all the neighborhoods have a fair shake at their money. Neighborhoods that started early have been able to spend it out. These neighborhoods just want to spend it out. And like I said, there's no fair way that the city can say we're going to redistribute this money without hurting the neighborhoods that have not been able to finish their program.
Oh, Representative Winkler. Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, Representative Kahn, I guess what I'm trying to get to is it your contention that the city didn't have the discretion in the statute to take the action that they did?
Yes. Yeah, but Mr. Chair, Senator, Representative Winkler, it's that because of the ambiguity and what happens to the money and termination, both in the statute and also in the joint powers agreement, we're contending that this money by state statute was intended for the purpose of the neighborhood revitalization program and to be spent out in the way prescribed by the statute. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. I know that you suggested bringing Mr. Miller forward, but we do have questions for the senator, and we'll start with the next question by Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Kielash. Kind of tagging on what Representative Winkler was asking here is, with the A2 amendment that puts a drop-dead date on this of 2014, what happens to any unspent funds then? I mean, in this ambiguity you're talking about, what happens with those funds at the end of 2014? Where do they go?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the current plan, and if you notice, the original does not have an end date. It has more about how the programs are spent, because, once again, this is Democratic organizations trying to get through the process that they need to go through to reach out to their neighborhoods and stuff to do their action plans. But that would be primarily at the end of this four-year period. We expect that all the monies will be, in fact, accounted for, and it'll be a matter of just doing the contracts oversight on those as they move forward. So the money will be contracted for. Currently, the money is dedicated to the neighborhoods, and the next step is for them to decide where it's going to go, and then they contract that. Then they work the contracts to get the money spent out the way the neighborhoods decided. So that's what's going on.
It again gives us that, Mr. Chair. Thank you. It again gives us that chance in the next 3 years for the city to come in and change the law, if they propose to do it, to continue the negotiations with the neighborhoods, to look at the oversight and so forth. So it gives us the time. This orderly transition, which we thought was happening, was sabotaged by city action. And so what this does is this puts it back on track for an orderly transition. And it gives us plenty of time to change the law if we decide that that's what's necessary. Just repeal the whole law, change the May to say that the city has any right to do anything it can and so forth. But that's not what the city's been asking
Representative
for.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess Representative Kahn, again, I heard a lot of mays and ifs and if they're going to do something, but that we're going to do it. But what happens if nothing changes, this law passes, nothing changes, and 2014 comes around and there's unspent money there? What happens to that unspent money? Where does it go? Does it go back to the city for them to use as they choose? Does it have to be spent on this list of items that are in currently in the statute? When you're saying it gives them time to change the laws, but if they don't change the laws, what happens to these unspent funds in 2014?
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, I would like to bring Mr. Miller up, who probably can answer these things much better than we can. But the point is, it gives time. You know, it's more time for something to happen than in the next few weeks is the answer. And so if one believes that city government is a good representation of the people, and one has seen this interest from the most local unit of government representation, that we're more optimistic of things working out than working out in the next few weeks.
Senator.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson. One of the things that has outraged neighborhoods about the city's actions is that we were working in good faith and moving towards trying to do a transition. In December, they chose to eliminate the approval of funds. They don't have the ability to dictate where they go, but the approval of funds to the neighborhood associations. With that action, all the negotiations we were doing with their staff member went by the wayside. So there's just no trust that the person we're negotiating with can speak for the city. So, you know, this came on not because we are trying to undermine the city or any of that. It's just that the city chose to, instead of work in cooperation with the NRP and the staff, they chose to attack it and in fact, ignore their own employee that was doing the negotiations. And you know, like I said, this is about having some kind of certainty for these neighborhoods. These are volunteers that are trying to improve their city. The money has been documented as well spent. There's no issues with it. NRP is the most popular program in the city, and it's one of those things that, you know, they've been doing a great job, and the neighborhoods have no faith that the city's going to live up to anything they say anymore because of the way they handled the negotiations to transition. So,
Representative Nelson.
I'm still not getting the answer I want, but anyway, that's the other question I had.
Maybe Representative Kahn's point is well taken. Maybe Mr. Miller would be the proper source to.
Let me put the other question I have here that has to do with the termination date that's in there. In my discussions with people that have come and lobbied me on this, and in my discussions with Senator Kielash, they talked about revolving, some of the neighborhood groups have set up revolving loan funds for the citizens to go and use. What happens to these with the A2 amendment? Do they go away on December 31st, 2014, or do they continue on as being administered by the NRPs?
Mr. Chair, one of the things that we identified is that the program income would continue to be spent out by the neighborhoods. In essence, the city is trying to do is say that, you know, look at the neighborhoods have revolving loan funds so they can keep using the money and recycling it through their neighborhood and constantly improving it, use the same money over several times. They have an over 99% payback on their loans, and what they're doing is doing what the statutes and what the city and everybody wanted, and that is to make it a better place to live. So their investments in revolving loan funds and the ability to leverage those dollars so hard should not be, you know, taken away from them by the city, who has not been doing that and has not been working with the neighborhoods and is not interested in trying to keep this productive program going. This has been a great program, and you know, I don't think anybody expected when this started that neighborhood associations would be smart enough to not only improve their neighborhoods in a variety of ways, they've invested in schools and parks and each street and coordinated with each other to make things happen. And they also did it very responsibly with the money. In fact, the money's coming back to them in this way. So now the city is trying to suggest that somehow these neighborhoods aren't doing their job, when in fact they're doing such a thorough job that they are able to invest more than it was ever intended by the original statute. And because it's a volunteer organization, mostly volunteers run these neighborhood associations, what the city is suggesting is that they be penalized for being fiscally responsible. And I just don't find that, you know, the neighborhoods did this so they could keep investing in their neighborhoods and keep, you know, the neighborhoods with the most needs are the ones that have done the best job as far as investing in housing, so, and things that make their neighborhood a better place. So.
Representative Nelson?
We'll wait. We'll have questions for after the next testifier.
Okay. Let's ask the questions. I know that we've got Simon, Scalzi, and Green. Mm-hmm. Questions to the senator, or would they be more questions that would be Representative Simon?
Mr. Chair, I have questions for the proponents, but not necessarily for Senator Kielash, so I can wait.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about the process here. We're talking about TIF funds. It was a ending TIF project. Has this gone to the tax committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it does not need to go to the tax committee because there's no taxes in here. This money is not, there's, the money's already been collected. The, in fact, all of this money, the statute has special TIF regulations on it and how it can be spent. And so there is no, the TIF money is already in place. We're not collecting anymore. In fact, the legislature gave the city power to reestablish their TIF district, and their intent at that time was to use the money from that TIF district for the neighborhood program that they set up and for the Target Center. And since that time, they've decided to take the money out of the neighborhood. So we gave them the option. They have lots of options to solve their financial problems. It just doesn't seem right that they take it away from neighborhoods that have done a good job, that have followed the rules, that have done everything and more that was expected of them. So,
Representative Scalzi.
Mm-hmm. As someone who's spent six terms on a local city council, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm very vocal in this committee about local control, mm-hmm. and I really feel that the city's we create the cities here at the state, and they have a right to do naughty things. And they do naughty things occasionally. In my own cities and cities that I don't have anything to do with, but I know a city in the Northeast Metro that did some terrible things to their employees, and so that their long-term employees were all joining unions because they were afraid they were going to lose their jobs. And people lobbied me constantly because this city was doing things wrong. They weren't balancing the books. Nobody knew where the checkbook was. It was that kind of a thing. And I told them consistently, this city has a right to do what they're doing. And then what the citizens do is at the next election, they replace those people. And in fact, the city in the Northeast Metro, that's exactly what happened. The mayor and the two city council members who had the 3-2 vote were replaced. And now the city's just going along just fine. And that's how it works in Minnesota. And I speak very vocally on this committee all the time that I'm not interested in telling cities that they have to behave. Because we give them rights and we give them powers. And then when they do something wrong, the citizens have the right to unelect them at the next election. And I know there's a lot of good testimony here, and I've talked to a lot of people in the last 2 weeks. And this is exactly why I think some of the use of TIF financing has been wrong, so wrong in the past. And my city never used it because we thought it should only be used for things like polluted soil and trying to make something happen that wouldn't happen otherwise. This is, to me, a terrible use of TIF funds. I understand that your neighborhoods have done a really good job, and you feel that the city has pulled the rug out from under you, and I'm sure there's many good reasons for feeling that way. I am such a strong believer in local control that I think that the cities, they have their election certificates just the same as I do, and they have a right to do naughty things. That's just the way I feel about this. I just don't know that we can get involved in the midst of a process and try to change what they've done wrong.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Kahn.
Representative Scalzi, we passed a law that said specifically what would happen. I can't believe that in the situation that you spoke about, that your city was that city you were talking about was disobeying any specific state law. If you don't like a law, that's why we meet in annual sessions. The point is to come in and change it, not to try and sabotage it. And so that's essentially the issue. You know, it's not, I can't believe that you have any situation which was covered by law the way this one is, that is similar.
Jim Scalzi.
Well, just in reaction to that, cities have responsibilities. They can't use tax dollars willy-nilly. I mean, there are responsibilities. In this particular city, the people felt they weren't doing what was in their best interest of use of tax dollars. So there are responsibilities that cities have.
But this is,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, but this is a specific law, you know, that we've done and that no one came in and said we should amend. And so this.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Representative, one of the things that the reason that this bill is written, this statute is written the way it was, is because the city abused their TIF as far as the state legislature at that time was concerned. So because of that, there's a specific way this TIF dollars could be spent. The TIF dollars are already collected. All of this money is already in place. It was already approved once by the cities to go to the neighborhood associations, just as this bill suggests. And so what I think you're saying is that the city should be able to do what it wants, when in fact the legislature said, because you didn't do what you said you were going to do in agreement with us, we're saying this is how you're going to spend this money this time. So it's like the legislature took the control away from the city for a particular reason. To give them back that control before the program is finished, I just don't think it fits what's required. And the other thing is that this money was never in the city's budget. It had nothing to do, it has nothing to do with the operation of the city. It is only for improving their neighborhoods. And in the process of improving their neighborhoods, the taxpayers of Minneapolis have seen property values increase incredibly because of this program. So the city is already gaining from the investments that wise investments and leveraging that these neighborhoods have done already in the increased amount of taxes that they've got. The amount of money we're talking about is less than 1% of the city's budget. It is, and it doesn't save taxpayers, property taxpayers, much of anything. There's other testimony that'll cover that. But this is not about us trying to take something from a local government. This is the state that said the local government is messing up. Let's give it to the neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods are as local as you can get on this. And they went through the process. They did all the hard work, and now to suddenly get undermined by the city on this before they can complete what they started, and it's the timeline on it. It was just arbitrary in the first place. They could have picked 30 years for all we know. I mean, there's really the timeline was this is at the time that the legislature acted and the time that the Joint Powers Agreement acted. They expected this to be able to be done in that time frame. They didn't anticipate all the things that the neighborhoods were doing to leverage funds. The fact that volunteers were much more productive and much more sensitive to using this money wisely and taking the time to make sure that the investments were sound and that taxpayers in their neighborhoods got the best bang for their buck out of it. The city is gaining tremendously because of the way this was set up.
Senator, I don't mean to interrupt, but I do know that you have a schedule
you need to be
on.
Is there anything else?
What I'd like to do is I'd like to ask Representative Green, as she is the last on my list of people who ask questions, so we can get you on your way today.
Thank you.
Sir,
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm deeply conflicted about all of this and really trying to continue to learn. And I don't know if you're the best person to answer these questions, so feel free to deflect and move on. But I have heard that the bill does more than just restore the funding. It changes a few things in the in the NRP law, and I wondered if you could elaborate.
Yep, there's a couple of things in the
Senator, very briefly.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there's a couple of things in the contracting part that probably Mr. Miller could handle as well. But essentially, what it does is the city is complaining because it's expensive. We're trying to keep the expenses out of the city. For that, we can handle it better, cheaper, and quicker with the staff that we have, and we have far less staff than the mayor's office has with far more responsibility at this point. So, is that
Senator? I'll hear more later.
Okay.
Senator, thank you. If there are no other questions, thank you for your time.
I appreciate your indulgence with my
schedule. You. Representative Kahn, from a procedural standpoint, I would like to, if it's all right with you, bring Mayor Rye back in,
sure.
And then we will go to Mr. Miller as we had suggested. Okay. Please, Mayor Ibeck, you would...
Council President Johnson.
Okay, and Council President Johnson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much.
And if you would, please state your name for the record. Council member going, or Council President going first, or are you going first, Mayor? Council member Johnson, welcome to the committee. And
Mr. Chair.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
For the record, my name is Barbara Johnson, and I am President of the Minneapolis City Council.
I'm R.T. Rybeck. I'm the mayor of Minneapolis.
Mayor, welcome as well. proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to speak to you today to this bill in the issue of neighborhood revitalization, an issue that is clearly important to all the folks that have joined us today. I want to say that it was the City of Minneapolis that came to the legislature under the leadership of then Vice Chair of the Council, Tony Scallon, to ask for approval to create the Neighborhood Revitalization Program. My mother was part of the City Council at that time, so I remember this very well. The Neighborhood Revitalization Program has done excellent work and significant and important work in making our city a better place to live and work. I was chair of my neighborhood association, helped start my neighborhood association, and it has been a wonderful addition to our community. The program was intended to create strong neighborhoods and led to a better, safer city for all. But it was intended to be a 20-year program, and as we move into its final year, the city recognizes the value in continuing to fund community engagement and neighborhood support. We have supported neighborhood associations. Our plans for the future continue to support neighborhood associations, and the neighborhood associations will keep their unspent money, Senator Nelson. Excuse me, Representative Nelson. It's clear that the transition to the new program, built on past successes but focused on the future, is difficult for some, but it's time to move on. Like every community in Minnesota, Minneapolis is faced with difficult choices and great budget challenges, requiring cuts to programs and services our residents have come to depend on. We have asked everyone, including our neighborhoods, to tighten their belts and find efficiencies to streamline services and deliver property tax relief to taxpayers. However, if this bill is passed, Minneapolis will have two separate neighborhood support programs running simultaneously for an undetermined number of years, now till 2014. This will be both confusing to neighborhoods and require administrative dollars to support identical programs. The city's plan will ensure that neighborhoods receive financial support in the coming years, since some neighborhoods have already completed their or will complete their NRP plans within the not-too-distant future. The bill before you does nothing to ensure that neighborhoods will receive even a minimum of those neighborhoods will receive even a minimum of financial support. The NRP funding distribution formula was needs-based. The city's new community engagement program more clearly and more intentionally targets the highest need and most diverse neighborhoods of the city. We feel that we have made a strong commitment to neighborhoods and set a course for support for them in the future. We feel strongly that this is an issue of local control and local decision-making by locally elected officials. We feel a great burden in the need to take action to provide property tax relief to our citizens, and we have to make difficult choices. Like other programs that the city has been forced to cut, including road repair, public safety, and affordable housing, we understand there are advocates who don't want the city to take such actions. I'm sure that if the city's financial situation was different, different choices would have been made. The situation is similar to what you all are going through with the difficult budget decisions that you have to make. There really are no easy fixes anymore, and difficult work is unavoidable. Minneapolis, just like other communities across our state, needs to be able to exercise our local decision-making authority to make the difficult cuts and to produce a reasonable budget with some measure of needed property tax relief. Again, for the City of Minneapolis, it's an issue of balancing the needs and the wants of residents and the burden on the city's property taxpayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Council President Johnson. Mayor Ryback.
Thank you very much, and I think Council President gave a very good overview of this. Before I went any further, I think Representative Winkler, Representative Nelson asked a very direct question that should get a very direct and simple answer. When the legislature took this action, you wisely gave us the option to choose how much of our property taxes to take off the tax rolls and put into this program. You did not mandate it. So the answer is very simple. We had the discretion within this. This is no violation of any law. This is we chose exactly to do what you intended to do, to use our local control, taking the circumstances at that time to take the action we needed. That's a very simple answer to a very simple question. Now, let's pull back from this for a moment and look at the Neighborhood Revitalization Program. Like the Council President, I was active in my neighborhood organization, and the Neighborhood Revitalization Program has done exceptional things in our city. It will continue, and we have made certain that it will continue. But what you're asking us to do right here is that you are proposing what I believe is one of the most dramatic overreaches that will not only impact the city of Minneapolis, but could produce, I believe, an extraordinarily dangerous precedent over the next year as local units of government throughout this state have to make extremely difficult decisions. Here's basically what we did. We faced a very tough set of circumstances. The Council President talked about the choices we had. We're not whining about it. You face extraordinarily different choices, and so does every mayor and council member and county commissioner and school board in the state of Minnesota. When it became abundantly clear that our citizens were taking too much of a property tax hit, we had to take tough action, and we did that. And we lowered the amount that we were levying on property taxes. We did that by not taking as much of our property off the tax rolls and dedicating it to this source. That was a very tough decision. It was not an isolation. It was coupled with cuts across the board. That is the right thing to do and what we should do. What you would be saying if you pass this bill is that you would say that when a local unit of government makes a tough choice like that in the name of property tax reform, they better look over their shoulder, because next year, as local government aid cuts come, as many other things happen, every single one of those organizations and local units of government could come back to this legislature and see exactly what you're seeing here today. I am surrounded by people who do phenomenal work in the city of Minneapolis. I am deeply sorry to disappoint them, but I have a whole city of people who are deeply disappointed because we simply don't have enough money to do everything we need to do. This will, I believe, set off an enormous impact that you will be spending a lot of time on over the coming year. One of the things that I think is important is the fact that the city of Minneapolis has taken tough action, and I think that's important. Our property taxes are too high, and we choose to do that. But more important than anything else, we need local control of these issues. Times change. Circumstances change. Representative Kahn said that at that moment we should have come back to the legislature and asked for authority. That's not accurate for two reasons. A, we had the authority, and B, we couldn't come back to the legislature. You were not in session. We needed to deliver tough action and make sure that we could deliver relief for people. Now, some may argue that we should have waited a year or two. To those people who are literally being priced out of their homes in the city of Minneapolis, we should not say, I'm sorry, we have to go back to the legislature and ask for authority we already have to lower your property tax burden. This is a tough issue. We've had to make tough decisions. You may ask yourself what to do in a tough thing where people make good points on both sides of the ledger. But the fact of the matter is, why are we here? Why is the legislature reaching into one unit of government and dictating what we can or should do to deliver property tax relief within the limits that you have given us? We ask you to know that we understand you have a tough job and we respect the job you do. We ask you to have the same respect for the work we do.
Thank you, Mayor. Questions for Mayor or Council President? Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I've had a crash course on NRP the last 3 or 4 days, and so I'm learning new things even at this hearing. But Council President, you had said something that I hadn't heard before, and I wanted you to elaborate and others can comment. You said that under your plan that neighborhoods can keep unspent money. Could you elaborate what that means?
Our community participation program is the underlying support for neighborhood associations. Last year, my neighborhood association, where I live, received, I think, this year will receive $36,000 to be able to continue the work that they do to involve citizens in citizen engagement activities. That program is a program that the city has initiated as a replacement for the outgoing NRP program. The other thing that program income that was referred to with neighborhoods who have revolving loan programs, those funds, as they come back in being paid back, those revenues come back to the neighborhood association in an account for them to be used to be expended for neighborhood activities. So there is ongoing support for neighborhood associations through those two revenues essentially at this point.
Hornstein.
So thank you. That's very helpful. Now, let's say there was a neighborhood like Hawthorne that has unexpended NRP dollars. How would they be able to keep money through this?
In our plan going forward, Hawthorne would retain those dollars to be expended in concordance with the law for activities in the neighborhood that are approved by neighborhood action plans until they are gone. And there are certain discrete funds that will be gone at some point, but there are these ongoing revenues that come through evolving loan programs. And it's our intention that Hawthorne would keep those revenues until they expend them.
And thank you. One last question. And those would be the revolving loan programs that are currently through the NRP program or some other?
Those are the revolving loan programs that the neighborhood associations have started themselves, and they belong discreetly to neighborhoods. But Hawthorne's unexpended dollars right now need to be, that they have in their account, they need to be expended in concordance with the law, in activities that are generated, decided by the neighborhood. The fact that it may take longer is fine. In our opinion, in the city's opinion, it's fine if it takes longer than 2014 because we have an ongoing program going forward.
Thank you.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mayor. Thank you, mm-hmm. Council President. Thank you. I, too, am really torn on this issue. I mean, I never imagined when I walked in on Monday morning the crash course that I would get on NRP. And I border Minneapolis. So this has been a real education. But to the point, I have a question that's almost an accounting question. And forgive me, I came in a little late to the hearing, so this may already have been discussed. Where does the money reside now? In other words, is this money that you are intending to withhold, or has it been given and you're intending to sort of claw it back or redistribute it?
The dollars that are, excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chair, excuse me, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Simon, the dollars for NRP are agglomerated under city resources, segregated under the Neighborhood Revitalization Program.
Okay. Representative Simon?
Okay, and then the other question I had was, you talk about the successor entity or organization. In terms of scope, is it pretty much, in your view, an apples-to-apples comparison, or will be some things that the successor organization will not do that NRP does, or vice versa? Can you just describe that? I understand there's this new regime or new entity. Tell us, how much of a continuation is this of NRP?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simon. The new program continues to recognize the existing neighborhood associations. They have to apply to receive city funds and demonstrate to the city that they are engaged in the activities that we support, outreach to communities, reaching the goals of the city, housing goals, public safety, meeting the city's priorities. Our city departments then work with those neighborhood associations to try and accommodate their goals with our goals, projects that we have in our capital improvement program meet with their activities that they want to see in their neighborhoods. And so there, I would, apples to apples, people would quarrel with that. We hope that we can continue to build on the success of the Neighborhood Revitalization Program because we like the structure. We think it's important for neighborhoods to be recognized as individual entities and decide, what's important for the city to invest in their neighborhoods. We don't have any quarrel with that.
Thank you. Representative Simon. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council President Johnson or Mayor Ryback, I don't know if you even have a copy of the bill language in front of you, but the language says it's a transition and termination requirements, and I would suggest that probably would have made sense to include in the original statute some mechanism for shutting it down. But I hope I'm not criticizing anybody in this room. But it says that in paragraph B, it says funds dedicated for neighborhood revitalization activities under this section, and then it says received by the neighborhood prior to January 1, 2011. And then it says, and the money is retained by the neighborhood. So have the funds been dedicated and received by the neighborhood?
Representative Winkler, I
prior
don't think
to January 1 of this year?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, right. Representative Winkler, I'm very sorry. Well, I can't speak to all parts of the bill. I believe this was part of the overall intent, to say that some of our neighborhoods were extraordinarily successful in their entrepreneurship. They created either revolving loans or access dollars from elsewhere, and our goal was not to touch those, to respect that that autonomy and that entrepreneurship and not go after that. That's my very quick understanding of what that the intent of that section was.
Mr. Chairman, I have never run for the Minneapolis City Council before, although I feel like I'm on it today.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Mayor Ryback, what I was asking about is actually the language of the bill, which I don't know if you have, but it says that if the funds are dedicated for NRP activities and they've been received by the neighborhood, then basically they stay with the neighborhood. And I guess my question is, were the funds dedicated and received by the neighborhood prior to January 1, 2011, the funds at issue here?
They're right back.
And maybe, sorry to interrupt, but maybe, you know, Ms. Dyson could speak to the language of the bill to talk about, you know, what that means. Because I see dedicated, and I don't know if that's an accounting term or
what that means. Ms. Dyson, can you help quickly with that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, I guess I would defer to the discussion at this time.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I hope there's a friend in the room we can phone, but maybe just Mr. Mayor can find out.
At this time, we are running short of time. This is a very important issue to a lot of people, and I do want to provide some time for individuals who have come from the neighborhoods to testify. And so with the indulgence of Mayor, if this is a very brief response to Representative Winkler's question, I would want to hear that.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to ascertain the facts.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you,
Sergeant
Friday.
He didn't say
Mr. Chair, at your discretion, I can call others to answer this.
I would be happy to, but if they could keep their response to Representative Winkler's question for clarification within 60 seconds or less, I think that would be greatly appreciated. Please identify yourself for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm David Rubidor. I'm the director of the Neighborhood and Community Relations Department for the City of Minneapolis. Chair and Representative, the answer to your question is that the funds, I believe the funds you're referring to are under the current NRP statute, are allocated out to the neighborhoods, and so the neighborhoods actually don't receive the funds until they go under contract, and then they get reimbursed for expenses. The funds that are being reprogrammed basically as a result of this action still stay with the neighborhood. So the money, any money that's being reprogrammed part of this process still goes back to the neighborhood. So it's all staying within the neighborhoods.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, I'm far more confused than I was before.
Representative Winkler? Representative Winkler, we do have the Mr. Miller, who is going to be coming up right after this, and perhaps he may be able to shed some more light on the facts for us. Are there other questions for Mayor Ryback or Council President Johnson? If not, I thank you for your time before the committee. And Representative Kahn, if you'd like to bring Mr. Miller forward for a two-minute recitation of his, and then we'll go to Representative Winkler. Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, since this person actually has most of the facts about it, you might need a little more than 2 minutes. So,
again, I do want to help you get a vote on your bill today, because I know it's important to you, Representative Kahn.
Yes.
State your name and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Miller. I'm the Executive Director of the Neighborhood Revitalization Program. I have a nice, great speech I was going to give, but I think, given all of the different comments that everybody's got, I think I'm going to try to address some of the questions you've had and see if I can help clarify things. First of all, Representative Winkler, you were absolutely correct. This is that the legislation that was created in 1990 basically was enabling legislation. It only applied to the cities of the first class, which meant basically Duluth, St. Paul, Minneapolis. That was the programmatic portion. But there was a separate piece. The other piece of the legislation that was passed in 1990 was the funding piece. That only applies to Minneapolis. And it only applied to Minneapolis if it used the money for the Neighborhood Revitalization Program. If it did not, it wasn't going to be eligible for the program money under the statute. So that's one point that I just want to make sure everybody does understand. Secondly, or I'll go to another point that I've heard, and I probably have missed some of the questions that you had. I'll try to address them as many as I remember. With regards to Representative Nelson, the questions about the unspent balance. At the point of time that there's an unspent balance, you know, we would look at, in effect, negotiating with either the city, the county, whoever it is that's appropriate, to, in effect, manage the remaining funds and do them under the processes that were established through NRP. Same types of contracting, the same requirements to look at the type of activity that's going on, and whether or not it meets the requirements of the statute. In our process, what happens is that when the neighborhood adopts a plan, that plan is then vetted through the policy board. The policy board approves it. It sends it on to the city council for final approval. The monies are then appropriated, but they're not yet expended. They're expended when they go under a contract. The contracting is really kind of the linchpin of where expenditures occur. So in terms of unspent funds, the intent in the discussions that were held last year was to basically transfer the unspent balance over to the city when it became very clear that the balance had reached a point where it was no longer appropriate to have a separate administrative activity. So that's what would have happened with that. With regards to having two programs, let me make a point. That question came up, and I heard the comments on it, and here's my concern. The way that the legislature acted in 1990 was to establish NRP with a funding stream that was dedicated. That was appropriate. The city council in 1992 adopted an ordinance which basically codified the law and said, okay, we're going to have a local program. That ordinance was changed last in 2004. It hasn't been amended or modified since then. That ordinance is part of the issue here. Because, in effect, when the city took the action on December 13th, it took an action that was not consistent with the very ordinance that it passed governing the use of these funds and the way that these monies were supposed to be handled. I'm not going to argue with whether or not there's an attorney opinion out there that might say that that's appropriate, but that is not, that ordinance still remains as it was before December 13th and was last amended in December 2004. When the legislature passed the law in 2008 allowing recertification of the TIF districts, it allowed two uses for them. There was no more money coming to NRP, the Neighborhood Revitalization Program. Those funds ended in 2009 with the final transfer that occurred December 22, 2009. I've heard a lot of people talk about, well, why didn't you spend the money before then? I want to point out to you that the money did not come in a very steady, stable stream. In fact, in the years between 2004 and 2009, there was very little resources coming in. And the policy board took the action of saying, we will not spend money until we are sure we have it. The final payment of the final transfer of about $27 million occurred December the 22nd of 2009. So there is no way that we were going to be spending out at the same rate that people might have anticipated had there been that steady stream of revenues coming in. So just that's a piece of information for you.
Mr. Miller, I can give you about another minute or so.
You got
there.
It.
Okay. Thank you.
What else would you like me to ask?
Well, I was going to say, because I know that Representative Winkler may have a quick follow-up, and Representative Green has asked as well, and I want to, again, honor the request of Representative
Kahn. I think answering questions is the best thing that you can do.
Representative Winkler. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Miller, what I'm trying to understand in the language of the bill is that it says that if the funds are dedicated and received by the neighborhood, and they're retained by the neighborhood, then they can only be expended on NRP purposes. So essentially you're saying that if the neighborhood has, if the funds have been dedicated and received and retained, dedicated and received by January 1, and they are yet retained by the neighborhood, then they may only be used to be spent on NRP purposes. And the question is, are the funds at issue that we were talking about today, were they dedicated and received by January 1? And what does the word dedicated really mean? Because does that mean it's in a bank account? Does that mean it's been programmed or that there's a separate fund? What does dedicated mean?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, in the context of the bill, we're talking about the dollars that neighborhoods have actually expended and they've received a return on. The program income is really governed by
it doesn't really fall within the statute at the present time, because it's very unclear as to whether or not there was any expectation neighborhoods would actually generate a return on the investment that you guys were allowing the neighborhoods to make. They did generate a return. The only discussion of that money at this point in time really revolves around the local ordinance. The local ordinance can be changed by the action of the city council. So in effect, what it is, it's basically saying that neighborhoods use the resources of NRP to invest in the neighborhood. They want to be able to recycle those and to continue to use them, but for the purposes of NRP, because that's the original statute. If you look at it more so from the standpoint of how long will that last, most neighborhoods will spend out those dollars very quickly because that's the only resources they've got. But this allows them to retain those resources for their expenditure. That's what it does.
Is that a Winkler?
Still got a question.
No, I don't have any more questions.
Okay. Representative Green. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. All right.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Simon, I have a question.
Thank you. For Mr. Miller, forgive me again, I've been ducking in and out if this has been answered, but why have some neighborhoods already spent their money and others not? And my understanding is that it's not just an income issue, that there are some neighborhoods with needs that have and some neighborhoods with high needs that haven't. Why the lag?
Well, the lag is
Miller.
Really, yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon. The lag was really created by the fact that when NRP began, the expectation was that all the neighborhoods in Minneapolis would be able to participate. That's a great expectation, but at that point in time, fewer than half of those neighborhoods actually were organized. Half of them were fewer, and half of them had a legal entity with which to contract. So there were a number of steps that had to be taken before a neighbor could even develop a plan. You had to get the organization set up. You had to start the process. You had to educate them, and you had to start training them. The last neighborhoods to enter NRP didn't enter until 1995. So in effect, what happens is when the neighborhood enters at that point in time, that's when they're starting their planning. It's going to, again, take them a few years to do that. These are not plans that get created in a weekend. These are plans that take a considerable amount of time and effort by the neighborhood residents to, in effect, create something that is addressing the priorities of the neighborhood. So that's what happens. It just takes a while for them to do that. It takes a while for them to spend. I'll also tell you it takes a while because they've got a lot of partnerships. The Eat Street example where we did a project with three neighborhoods and the redevelopment of Nicollet Avenue from Franklin down all the way down to 28th took 7 years to complete. That money couldn't be expended all at one point in time. It was expended over that period of time.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just make a comment on this, because my neighborhood, the neighborhood I used to live in, the Prospect Park area, was one of
Brevity,
the ones
please.
That very quickly could spend its money. And the answer is that more well-off neighborhoods with lots of professionals like Franklin's and mine were able to just organize quickly, get rid of the arguments, and just spend it. It's much more complicated in the neighborhoods that have less of that ability, more factions, more really pressing needs. His did a neighborhood park, mine did a school, and so forth. When you have totally competing pressing needs, it's much harder.
Representative Simon,
very quick
follow-up. Thank you,
yes,
sir.
Yes, very quickly. There's been talk about this new organization. I know it won't please everyone, and that it's maybe not apples to apples, but because there is a new organization in place already, or certainly one that will over time take over the functions of the NRP, why won't this stuff still get done? I mean, what's your concern?
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, I think that the issue from the neighbor's perspective is is there really a commitment to do that? Because the funding for the new organization only exists through 2011. After 2011, the funds for that new neighborhood program come from the monies that are being transferred over from NRP. They are not new monies. There is no money from the common project going into the neighborhood activity or from the city's general fund going into that new organization in terms of the neighborhood activity. That's one of the concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Representative Kahn?
Again, very quickly, it's just the transfer to at a much higher cost to taxpayer-paid function from a function that's been largely volunteer and done at a much lower cost.
Thank you. The last representative question that I have is from Representative Green. Very quickly, if you would, please.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to reiterate the question that I asked earlier, which is, you know, the way this bill is presented often is it's really about returning this money that the city took to the neighborhoods. But there's more in this bill than that that does concern me, that addresses design changes in NRP, and I feel like we're not going to end up discussing that because we're going to, you know, get caught up in this kind of other issue. Why are these other changes being made now? You know, to some extent, I just am voicing a concern that this seems an inopportune time.
Representative Kahn?
I think the basic reason is because of costs. Because, for example, the contracting, every year the city not only held up the contracts, but then submitted a significant bill to NRP for just overseeing the contracts. And so I think that's, the NRP has its own contracting ability, and we would like to use that at a much more effective, cost-effective process.
So. Representative Green, very quickly, please.
Thank you, and that is compelling. I just want to point out we're in the 19th year of a 20-year program. Yes. Could we have not changed that earlier?
Well,
Representative Kahn.
I guess until the city did this kamikaze attack in December, it kind of wasn't necessary.
Mr. Miller, 15
Chair,
seconds or less.
I'll give you just 2 seconds or less. Mr. Chair, Representative Green, the contracting ends up being the squeeze point at which you got control. And that's what the city uses during this December 13th action, because if it doesn't agree to contract, there's no expenditure that can occur.
Thank you. With that, Representative...
Mr. Chair, I would like to renew my motion to move House File 1358 as amended to the General Register. And, Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call.
A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Yeah, I had an amendment, but Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was not aware of any other amendments.
Okay, Representative Hornstein.
Sorry. Well, my deepest apologies. I was not aware of another amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an A4 amendment, and
I don't have a copy.
Okay. Oh, this. I'm sorry. I thought the page had it. I apologize.
I had a list of numbers, Mr. Chairman,
okay,
that I don't think was in amendment form.
Well,
I didn't have anything in my packet. And
all right. Well, I don't know what you'd like to do at this point.
Yeah.
Is it something that we could do as a quick oral amendment, Representative Hornstein?
Probably not, but I can at least explain what it is. Can someone type it? I don't think anyone's going to like this anyway, but I'll bet.
Mr. Chairman.
Maybe you know the idea. Maybe you could speak to it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it has what it...
Representative
Mr. Chair, I like everybody else, has been struggling with this, and you know, I think there's great people and good arguments on both sides. And what I thought would be perhaps helpful, although I'm realizing now it's not, possibly with the city and the neighborhoods, is that we really target these funds to the neighborhoods that need them most. And so basically what the amendment does is you know, targets a relatively small amount of these funds towards the most in need neighborhoods. And I don't think Representative Kahn likes it, but she'll speak to that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, he did achieve one thing, unity on both sides. Neither I like it, nor do the mayor's people like it. It is extreme micromanagement. And when he talks about targeting to the most neighborhoods of most needs, one of them is targeted to one of my neighborhoods in my district that totally supports the bill as it is, and that is really not a neighborhood of need. So,
okay,
Representative Hornstein, very quickly, please.
In the interest of time, I guess I'll withdraw this because we don't have it, and I don't think anyone likes it either. But it was really an attempt to present a compromise, retaining some of the city's property tax funds and also the integrity of some of these neighborhood groups. But,
again, well, Representative Hornstein, my apologies.
I guess people have it.
Yeah.
If you want to vote it down, you can.
Well,
Representative Hornstein, you had suggested that you were going to withdraw the the amendment?
If this, well, people have it. The author has spoken. I don't know if anyone else wants to address it. Mr. Speaker, I'll withdraw. I mean, Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw.
And again, my apologies. I was not aware of your amendment, Representative Hornstein. Representative Green, very quickly, please, as we're moving to closure today.
Yes, thank you. I just needed to jump in for a split second because Representative Hornstein and I are here on this committee. We're from Minneapolis, and I think I can safely say for both of us that we are deeply conflicted about this bill. It plagues me that the discussion has generated kind of accusations of deceit back and forth and has really set up what I perceive as a very false dichotomy as the neighborhoods versus Minneapolis. A couple weeks ago, we discussed Crown Hydro, also in the same committee, and I spoke pretty emphatically about local control issues, and I have to say I'm going to be voting consistently with that point of view, and it's been a difficult process, and I hope people will continue to engage with me on this issue and others.
Thank you, Representative Green.
Anytime.
The roll call being requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pepin?
Aye.
Representative Murray?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Pass.
Representative Beard? Representative
Aye.
Green?
Aye.
Representative Green?
Nay.
Representative Hancock?
Aye.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative McFarland?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
Representative Sanders?
Aye.
Representative Scalzi?
No.
Representative Simon?
Pass.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Winkler?
Pass.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Simon?
Aye.
Representative Winkler?
No.
Roll call being held. There are 9 yeses and 6 noes. The motion passes.
Thank you very much.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.